Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
So it was like a functional thing.
I mean, I guess, except that the Ford F-150 can pull your trailer just fine. No one knows. No one understands this move by my father, but it's caused a lot of downstream impact.
Oh, my goodness.
He just learned went Chevy one day, podcast. Just like that.
Learning
all right. Hello, everyone.
Every day on this podcast.
I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, the daily podcast where we try to make today make sense. In case you're
today
new
is
here,
what
we'll
do you
tomorrow.
Want to know Wednesday? Yes. Today is what do you want to know Wednesday? And if you caught the tail end of that little convo Molly and I were having before actually things started, you learn all kinds of things about a person when you chit chat before the tape deck gets rolling. That's all I'm saying.
It's true. You got to entertain before.
Yeah.
That's true. That's where all the good stuff comes out, is right before the show. Maybe
that's right.
We could start putting out, you know, Easter eggs or like exclusive content or something. Or maybe
that'd be funny. That'd be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be a good idea.
Yep.
Yeah.
I bet there's a fundraiser in there somewhere. Anyway.
There yes. So the way this works is your questions, our answers, 15 minutes. We all learn something. I already learned something today, so we could quit right now. But then we'll get out of your hair.
Yep. Today we are going to start with a cryptocurrency question, heaven help us, that is incredibly related to the Colonial Pipeline hack. All the highlights.
Ready?
Hi, Kai and Molly. Alec from Alberta, Canada calling with a question about cryptocurrency. In the wake of the recent high-profile hacking of a certain pipeline company and the news leaking that a payout was made in cryptocurrency to ransomers, it got me wondering. Do we have any real-world statistics on how crypto is being spent? Is it still just the stuff of dark web and ransoms? Or is it actually starting to get used for retail purchases? Please make me smart.
First of all, we have a listener in Alberta, Canada. Can we
Which
just say,
awesome.
Go Canada?
Yep.
Oh, Canada?
Yep.
Can we say that?
We're
okay.
Worldwide. Yeah. We're worldwide on this podcast.
Us and Canada.
I will say cryptocurrency is very popular among ransomers, and I suspect that is due to the international nature of the work, if you will, because one of the selling points of cryptocurrency is that you can use it internationally without fees. Like, it's easier to send back and forth. And that, to be honest, is one of its strongest arguments, is that it's, you know, for people who want to send remittances or just money back and forth, it's a lot easier. Okay, so here's the deal. You know, the most common crypto being bought in North America is Bitcoin, which you can technically spend on a lot of things. There are lots of places that say they take it, whether it's a coffee shop or, you know, a travel website. You can use them for in-game purchases and obviously NFTs. However, most people really don't use Bitcoin for payment for lots of different reasons. Right. Only, it looks like, about 8% of the crypto in North America went to merchant services last year. They think that about the same amount actually went to these, what they call illicit services, according to Chainalysis, a blockchain research firm. There are so many middlemen involved in the industry that's supposed to cut out the middlemen. It's amazing. And that's like your ransom payments, your dark web transactions, scams, a lot of scams. So some of the reasons that it's not easy to spend include the sort of variation in value, which is probably the biggest reason. Like, it's hard to spend a thing if you don't know how much it's going to be worth from day to day. Right. It also carries with it transaction fees, and that, much like a credit card, And the transaction fees themselves are not fixed. So those can vary. So like at the beginning of this year, the average fees were like 28%. 0.28%.
0.28%
on any given transaction. And these fees basically are enticements to miners to actually process the transaction, because everything that happens has to be processed on the blockchain. And so in theory, you could have a no fee payment, but like it might never go through because a miner might not process it, because they're like, well, I didn't get paid for that. And so based on how much traffic there is in the Bitcoin network, the fees vary. Right now, the cost of sending transactions on the Bitcoin network has increased by 2,213% since the turn of the year. The fees are now as high as $6.64 on every transaction. And so that also is a little bit of a downer if you want to buy, for example, a cup of coffee that costs less than $6.
Also, sorry, here comes Willow with her disgusting tennis ball.
Oh, boo-boo.
There it goes, out the door. Well, you know, she's going to come and get all huffy puffy or whiny or something. I don't even know. Anyway, sorry. So two things to add on to what Molly said. Number one, so the $5 million in crypto, and we don't know what crypto it was, right? We don't know if it was Ether or Bitcoin or whatever. But if it was Bitcoin, right, because odds are that's what it was, it's now worth some percentage less. And I'm talking like some percentage in the 30% less range because of the volatility of that coin. That's why it's an asset class. It's not a medium of exchange, right? Because as Molly said, you just don't know what it's going to be worth. Number two, for those interested in crypto sort of on the larger, more macro scale, let me recommend another podcast. It's if you know Chris Hayes at all from MSNBC, he does a podcast called Why Is This Happening? And he had Joe Weisenthal from Bloomberg on the other day, and Joe's deep into crypto. And it's an excellent podcast, really informative, and changed the way I think about it. Truly, it did. And so I recommend that
podcast. Wait, from what to what?
Well, so I had always been scoffing at Bitcoin and crypto because it was my understanding that these were meant to be legit means of exchange, that, you know, the goal was to, in some short order of time, get it so you could legitimately buy a cup of coffee or a pizza and have it be a worthwhile transaction. And this was granted in the earlier days before the volatility set in. But that clearly is not a viable thing now. And Joe goes through a whole use case of why you actually want a means of exchange that is not traceable or involving a third party. And I won't spoil his thunder, but it's a really good podcast, and it changes the way you think about this, because if you look at it in terms of what is the cryptocurrency problem trying to solve, what problem is cryptocurrency trying to solve, rather, that opens up a whole new lens in how to think about this. And it's called Why Is This Happening with Chris Hayes. I thought it was really good. So,
excellent. Yep, totally. Yeah. And all of that, of course, assumes that it ever becomes that and doesn't just end up staying, you know, an environment killing asset class. Yes.
Right. Right.
That not for nothing. Terrible. Terrible.
Terrible. Terrible. All right. We're going more tech here. Cookies and privacy. Roll the tape.
Hello, Kai and Molly. This is Ted.
Hello, Ted.
From Groton, New York, Finger Lakes area. First of all, I just want to say I love hanging out with you guys every night, so thank you. I've always wondered what happens if you don't press that I accept button when you go to a new website and it says, we use cookies. Do you accept? What happens if you don't accept it? I wonder if it's kind of like ripping the label off of a mattress that says, don't take this label off by penalty of law. Will you get blocked? Will your computer shut down? Make me smart. Thanks.
I like Ted is a rules guy. Ted is a rules guy. Yep. If you look carefully, a lot of them have a little X, like a lot of the pop-ups that say, do you accept or not accept? You could just close it.
Yeah, you can just X out?
Yeah, you can just X out. In some rare cases, a site won't work the same. But for the most part, it makes no difference. And I think that My guess is, I don't know this for sure, my assumption is that if you click X, it's the same as hitting I accept. Because the way that most websites operate at this point is like, once you land here, you've essentially agreed to the EULA.
You opted in. Right.
Unless you click the other thing, which is I do not accept, and then you go, and then you find out what kind of website you're dealing with, because some of them have turned, by default, have turned off the ad tracking cookies. Yeah. And some leave them on by default so that you have to turn it off in order not to get tracked. But all of this is happening because of the GDPR.
Okay, now you have to explain two things. What is a EULA? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The EULA is the end user license agreement. So if you were to go to the bottom of the website and it would be like, you know, you agree to these terms and this and that, and we take the babies and all the things happen. And by looking at this, you agree.
They don't take babies.
I don't know. There have been lots of satires about the Apple end user license agreements, because they're just like, we will do anything we want forever, for all time,
for sure.
Even into the rest of the universe.
And quick GDPR, because I have a follow-up.
The reason this is happening, right, is because of the General Data Protection Regulation, the GDPR. Remember, we had a whole like drinks-based episode about it, like we do.
Yes.
But yeah, that is why all those labels now have gotten more annoying, because all the websites implemented the same rules as Europe, which have to give you the option to opt out of being tracked by certain types of cookies. So that's what's going on.
Okay. Yes, and thank you. Now, how long is this going to last? Because every freaking time I go to a website, I got to click on the accept cookies thing. And honestly, it's getting annoying.
Yeah, it is super obnoxious, and it would be really great if there was just some sort of invisible setting that you could check for everything, such as a do not track. Yeah, once upon a time, there was an effort at do not track so that you could put yourself in a database, much like you do with, you know, spam calls, and say, like, please, which is not perfect, but at least is something, and it hasn't gotten very far. You can...
Oh, all right.
Yeah, there's not. I don't know. The web is just annoying right now. Like, you go and you get that I accept one, and then it's like, do you want to sign up for my newsletter? And then also, do you want me to send notifications? And like, what does
exactly? And the answer is no.
I don't know.
I just want to read this website.
I just want to read this website. Oh my God. Also, I'm already subscribed. I already pay for like 100 different websites. Why do I also have to pay for this one just to read the one story? Oh my God. The web is being ruined. Someone fix it.
Yes.
Okay, we have the bonus. I know we usually only play this game on Fridays, but we're playing half full, half empty today. We need it.
Hi, this is Jesse from Charleston, South Carolina. Half full or half empty on coffee beer?
Oh, now I have a follow up question for Jesse, but I'm going to go with the question and then I'll pose my question afterwards. So coffee's getting really popular in beer. Guinness is out with one. There's a list of some 27 coffee beers from familiar craft brewers that we're going to put on our show page. Thank you, Marissa. Actually, Donatam is doing all the work today instead of just being supervising, because Marissa's out. Anyway, so you can put coffee in any kind of beer you want. You see it mostly in stouts, right? You see mostly coffee stouts, which I'm not a huge fan on. It's been kind of trendy for a while. Brewers Association introduced what was then called the coffee-flavored beer category at the 2002 Great American Beer Festival. Again, not a fan. It's been around for a while. I would say half empty. But I'm a beer snob. I'm a very narrow lane beer snob. I want a nice hoppy IPA, nice and chewy, good. Just that. Don't want no coffee with my beer. I want coffee with my coffee.
There's something so gross about, kind of chewy about. I'm not the world's biggest beer person, but I will say that beer often makes me sleepy. And if it had coffee in it, then you could get sort of an up or downer equilibrium that might be kind of good. I don't know if they have caffeine in them.
Let us not mix our drugs, shall we? Let's do that.
I could see a nice like coffee porter. That would actually be lovely as like a brunch situation. Yeah, I'm half empty. It sounds gross. Yeah, I'm trying to make it work here, but I don't like beer.
Don't force it. I should tell you, by the way, so Amy was on Friday, and I said, hey, Amy, what are you having? And she said, oh, I'm just doing bourbon. I guess it's a little hardcore. And I'm like, no. Molly brings a full glass of tequila on Friday, so you're in good company.
I love her.
So, you know, you were with us in absentia, might I say.
Oh, that is delightful. Amy Scott. Yeah. I could just tell that she's so great. And she always puts up with my, like, I have many thoughts about housing. emails.
Yes, yes. So please tell me.
I should warn you now.
That was great.
This is Friday is the kickoff of my birthday weekend. So
oh, look out!
I gotta make it special.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy!
Exactly.
All right. Well, stage has been set, and with that, we're out of here. What Do You Want to Know Wednesday is behind us. Back tomorrow for Thursday. Hollowed out shell, not hollowed out. I don't know. We'll see. In the meantime, your questions, emails, voice memos, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Send them to us, would you? Because we need stuff to fuel our What Do You Want to Know Wednesdays. So that comes
it's
from
true.
You guys.
Yeah. Ask your questions. We beg you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we have to do so much work. It's like our break from the news on Wednesdays. That's Make right. Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and our Make Me Smart explainers.
Today's program was engineered, I believe, I have no direct evidence of this, by Charlton Thorpe. Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is a senior producer doing lots of work today because Marissa's taking a day off. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. I'm just hoping Charlton's
I love that we're giving people days off. Good for us.
I know. Yeah.
Good for us. Good also, for us. Welcome Marquet to the PodPage team doing some digital producing. Welcome. Welcome to the team. You'll be on the show any minute now. Soon enough. That's just how we roll around here.
Surprise!
You will be asked to perform.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.